Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician and CVPM, Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 97 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So once again, we're broadcasting from Lawrenceville, Georgia, on this special Valentine's Day edition. I really didn't pay attention outside. What does our weather rock say the weather's like today?
Our weather rock.
Where is our weather rock?
I'm like dying over here. The weather rock is actually pretty hysterical. Oh my God.
You didn't bring it up.
I did not bring it up.
Okay. It must be outside so that we can tell what the weather's like.
Of course, yeah. So the weather rock today is telling us that it's wet,
which wet equals... and it's cool, right? Yes. So it's letting us know the temperature outside is kind of cool, and the fact that the rock is wet, it tells us that there is some rain.
So, yes, once again, thank you, Dr. Reese, for your wit.
Yeah.
She put a podcast topic on my desk. It was a white piece of paper with a circle... with a white rock inside the circle.
It was glued to it, right?
She it was taped, fixed it, but yeah, taped it. Okay. Yeah, she fixed it to it. And it basically said, this is your weather rock.
If your rock is hot, right?
It means it's sunny.
If your rock, the last one was kind of, I had to think about it, but you know, if it's wet, then it's rainy. If it's cold, it's cold.
If it's white, then it's snowing.
Yeah.
If it's gone.
If it's gone, there's probably a tornado in your area. So, yeah.
So funny.
Hilarious.
So
thank you,
funny.
Dr. Reese.
Yes. So, yes, the rock is wet and cold outside. So, that means Lawrenceville is dreary, overcast, gray,
back home
drizzly.
In Texas, it up around the Lubbock area, it is snowing and single digit temperatures.
Yeah, so it's snowing in a lot of places right now. And I actually... you know, I often try to prepare for things that we're going to talk about here on the podcast and that kind of thing. But Texas actually has a law that says you have to bring your pets inside during severe weather. So there's
what?
Other states. Yeah, so I'm reading it. Texas law requires pets to be brought inside during severe weather versus like leaving your dog outside in the snow or the rain or the cold or whatever.
Does it companion animals, pets? Is it talking about livestock at all?
Well, I didn't really go into all that. It just says pets. So I would assume it means like dogs and that kind of thing.
Personal pets,
There's also Denver. It's talking about the danger is leaving your pet outside. I know Michigan got some snow.
So that's interesting. Previous episodes, when we first started, we talked a lot about the heat and don't leave children in hot cars. Really don't leave children in cars, period. But do not leave your pet in a hot car. And we don't really think about the cold weather here in Georgia. We get it every once in a while, but it's not at the forefront of our thoughts.
So usually. This article basically states, real quick, it says that Section 821 of the Texas statute states that it is illegal to restrain your dog during certain weather conditions. This includes freezing temperatures, heat advisories, hurricanes, tropical storms, and tornado warnings. So interesting that it doesn't really say anything about cats. but it also does state that Section 821 covers things like ensuring your pet has proper food and water, and the seizure of animals that are being improperly treated may take place. So my point being is that when I started looking for, you know, pets in the news and things to talk about, this is popping up everywhere because I think Midwest America, Middle America, towards the west and the north, they're getting trampled with snow right now,
right?
Even though we're not seeing it. So it's a big deal to bring your pets in and kind of keep them protected.
We had a cute little
the elements.
15-pound dog that Jen was working with the other day, and it had little booties on.
That's so cute.
And I'm not sure why, but they were really cute. And as the dog was walking out, it like threw a shoe. You know, to use a horse term, Jim got to the front door and realized he was missing a boot. So he had to go back and find the boot and reaffix the boot. So anyway,
that's hysterical.
It was cute. So definitely those boots are good for heat or cold to try to protect those pads. So
yep.
Completely off subject, I know, but that's what we do. Why don't we talk about, let's talk about the Holland story.
Okay. Holland story.
Since we're talking about, you know, shelter and pets outside. So there are going to be a number of feral cats in our area. There are going to be stray dogs.
In our direct area? So Gwinnett County is like overpopulated with feral cats.
Yes.
We've been talking about that for a really long time.
Yes. And then lots of dogs running around, you know, ultimately, hopefully they wind up, I guess, at the Humane Society and get rehomed is kind of the goal.
Yep.
But big problem has been for the last 25 years, continues to be a big problem. Way back whenever we realized, we as a people realized this was a problem, you know, sterilizing these pets became really, I think, probably the main tool that we use to try to control the population. We've talked about sterilizing dogs and cats at a young age. If you sterilize them too early, you run the risk of, in cats, them developing like a lower urinary tract disease because their urethra in a male in particular often does not develop properly. And then I guess the most recent study, like the Golden study, if we neuter, spay or castrate large breeds of dogs, now there's the thought that maybe they are more prone to certain types of cancer, right? So all over the place, but
yeah, you lost me a little bit. So how did this relate back to shelter animals? Like, this is why people are giving them up.
So we're talking about what's going on outside with the pets, you know, and so some of these pets are forced to fend for themselves. I mean, really the story that Holland late last year became the first country to home every stray is where I was going. You presented that story.
And so you're saying that
so
part fluted cat and your FIC cats that you're talking about, those are reasons that people here would surrender their pets and that's how they become strays?
No, I'm saying if and when we spay and neuter pets that are really too young and don't let them develop, we can cause other problems. We're solving an overpopulation problem, hopefully, or we're not solving it. We're helping to prevent it. But
I see
like
where,
most
I see
things
the
in life, we can, you know, it's a balance, right?
Right.
And so
benefit has to outweigh the cost.
Right. So typically I still would recommend spaying or neutering a dog or cat at around 6 months of age. They're somewhat mature. Go ahead and do that before they start developing bad habits. However, in light of the Golden Retriever study, now myself and many of our doctors are recommending that we spay and neuter them a little bit later. And yet on the stray and rescue side, we're still, not me, but industry is still spaying and neutering as early as 6 weeks of age.
Gotcha.
So again, balance. If we can do that and you know, sterilize the pet to try to prevent overpopulation, yay, as long as we don't cause another problem. So where I was going with my thoughts were the Netherlands has been working for a very long time to try to eradicate dog homelessness. And there's a couple of key components in this article that let them be successful.
So, yeah, to your point, as you said, so Holland, the Netherlands, which I educated myself here briefly. Did you know that Holland is essentially two provinces of the Netherlands? Like, the Netherlands is the country, but Holland is, like, the north, and it's very weird. I don't understand it. I've never been, obviously, but...
I didn't know that.
They're basically the same, but they're regionally different, if that makes sense.
Kind of like Ireland and Northern Ireland, but yet different. So, anyway...
Yeah, so like they call them Holland, but essentially it's of the Netherlands. It's the north and the south region together. Anyways, super weird. But yeah, so what you said is that they have completely eradicated dog homelessness, which is fantastic. And you were talking about how there's some things that have come into play which allowed them to do that. So, right.
So spaying and neutering.
Yes.
So pause. Educational moment here.
We've already talked about this. Neutering.
Neutering means to castrate or to do an ovariectomy or ovariohysterectomy.
So that's interesting because one of the things that this country is doing is that they're offering sterilization services for free for all dog owners.
So exactly. That's a huge point that I was going to make, that this is a no-charge service, which is absolutely going to take economics out of the picture.
But they're doing it, as you mentioned, this whole ovariectomy versus ovariohysterectomy. They're doing it with hysterectomies. They're saying ovary sparing spays.
Yep. So just a hysterectomy, a person would get.
Mm-hmm. And then a dog vasectomy. So interesting. So it allows the pets to keep their sex hormones and essentially, I would guess, to your point, mature, if you will. Doesn't necessarily eradicate all of the cancers and that kind of thing, which is why we encourage people.
Yeah, I don't see a need to do a dog vasectomy.
But at least in this country, these dogs are now not able to procreate.
Yeah. So that was cool. But also, there is a huge fine. Well, animal abuse, it talks about. You have, in order to own a pet, back up, 1 out of 5 Dutch women? What do you call people from Holland?
Dutch people.
Dutch?
Yeah.
Own at least one dog, according to this article. And so, yeah, if you are, I guess, tried and convicted of animal abuse in Holland, there is a 3-year prison sentence that goes along with that, as well as a 16,000 euro fine.
That's insane. This article also starts to talk about, like, you know, how did the Dutch do it? You know, what made them able to do this first? So basically, by sterilizing all the stray pets, then they incentivize their adoptions with, get this, a tax break.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for people who buy dogs in pet stores, they actually disincentivized.
A huge tax, right?
By giving them a huge tax on those.
Yeah, that's very wise. I really think there's a lot going on there that we should in the U.S. look at and maybe implement as well, because we know that we have a very large pet store in one of our malls locally that sells a lot of disastrous medical, surgical problems of a dog.
Absolutely. So they're selling these dogs that are purebred, but yet instantly as puppies, they're having
major problems. And they're selling these dogs for $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. Unheard of.
Yeah.
And some of our clients happen to go into the pet store and they feel sorry for these pets and they wind up adopting them.
Rescuing them. For a very high price.
Yep. And then, yeah, they are so probably inbred that they do have a lot of major, major problems. So I think that would be an excellent idea, to have a huge tax on those sales. I also think it would be an excellent idea to require every pet to be licensed in the state of Georgia. And if they are intact, meaning they have not been spayed or neutered, a huge license fee.
Yep. Just the administration of that, though, and like the fee for all of that, I think it would really go up. Now, in Michigan, where we lived, you know, your dog had to be licensed and essentially legally you had to have a rabies vaccine, and that's how you got your dog licensed. And if you were caught walking around with your dog, you couldn't provide that. Or essentially, if your dog bit someone and you couldn't provide it, then yeah, there are huge fines to kind of carry along.
Yeah. So
but there are plenty of states in America that have eradicated the sale of puppies in pet stores. So I'm hoping that Georgia can kind of follow suit with that at least in the next year or two. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
But even to your point, if it doesn't happen, like, how can we make it a non-profitable business for these people? I mean, because these people are making tons of money.
It's a business, yeah. I mean, okay. Unfortunately, the world does require money to make the world go around. And so I get business is business. But, yeah, I think there needs to be a little more regulation going on there and incentivizing and disincentivizing, as you said. So,
sure.
But are private breeders, is it the same with them or is it not, or is it in between?
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I told you that Joyce, who's a groomer of ours, mm-hmm. and she's a listener of the podcast, she suggested that we should talk about breeds on the podcast and kind of like talk about, I guess, breed specifics and that kind of thing. But more interesting to me, I guess, is to your point, these breeders, quote unquote, but they're breeding not purebred dogs. We have now come all of these doodle versions, which essentially are mutts, right? Like they're mixed breeds,
right?
But nobody calls them that.
We don't call them mutts anymore. We have kind of gotten away from mix. Now we try to see what they look like, and you know, so my beagle pug is now a puggle.
Yes.
Right. Versus, so say he's a puggle versus a mutt or a mix.
Yeah.
The doodle thing, when did that start? 20 years ago? 50?
Maybe 15 or so. I've been practicing for 14 years.
I mean, they became super popular because people, I guess, figured out and thought that poodles don't shed or have as much dander. And then when you mix them with a little bit larger breed of dog, you're going to get a big breed of dog that doesn't shed or have a lot of dander. So therefore, they should be hypoallergenic.
So the Labs and the Goldens were the first to kind of come about, at least in my...
Labradoodle and then Golden Doodle. We have Aussie Doodles now.
Yep.
And we were talking, we had a really handsome one come to the practice a couple days ago.
Yeah. Good looking dogs, some of them. But again, to your point, like, is this different than pet store? Because now you just have all these, you know, bred dogs.
It is and it isn't. Pet stores are kind of a third party, right? They're a vendor of the, they're not breeding. I don't know where they're getting their dogs from.
Puppy mills is what everyone suggests, right? Yeah. Like, I have no idea.
Internet sales of dogs as well, right? You know, from the, you could go online and see this whole slew of pets and you have no idea where they're coming from or are they healthy or not. You know, you know nothing about
right.
them. So, yeah, again, a little bit of thought and maybe some regulation need to go in there. If you are a private breeder, you know, say in the state of Georgia, the same thing, your facility should be inspected and licensed, and there should be a pretty hefty fee for that.
The Department of Ag should have a handle on what you're doing, what you're producing, how often.
But is that a priority with our government? And the answer is
no.
It's not, unfortunately. Until somebody becomes a big advocate and wants to take on some of the work and put that out there. So,
for sure. So
congratulations, Holland. That's pretty awesome.
That's fantastic
and inspiring
news. Yeah.
So healthy pet, happy life. I just wanted to briefly, since we're still in this whole pandemic thing and the coronavirus vaccine is out, right? We still have two. We have the Moderna and the Pfizer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one that they show, they did not show any effectiveness, AstraZeneca or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, I know Merck basically, with our local veterinary reps, Merck Animal Health has told us that the Merck human side of things, they weren't seeing any results with their vaccine. So they've kind of refocused their efforts from vaccine to therapeutics.
Okay.
And
Merck is a big, we've talked about this before, they are a big proponent to their, one of their goals or challenges is they're trying to eliminate rabies worldwide in people, which we don't see that as a big problem in the U.S. So, anyway, I wanted to talk just briefly, or maybe not, 3-year duration vaccines versus 1-year duration vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So we here at our practice, probably 20 years ago, whenever a 3-year distemper, adenovirus and parvovirus vaccine came out for dogs, it was labeled as a 3-year vaccine. They had done challenge studies to show that you had 3 years of protection against these diseases. And we decided that we were proponents for these vaccines because it meant that we had to vaccinate the pets, you know, every 3 years versus once a year. It was less needle sticks, and why not take advantage of, you know, the medicine if it's out there and available.
Mm-hmm.
So one common belief is that a 3-year vaccine is more potent or stronger or more dangerous than a 1-year vaccine. Would you agree?
I think that's how some people feel. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah,
yeah, for
so,
sure.
Yeah, so chime in for sure on this. So,
I fielded many a questions in exam rooms with this exact
right,
comment.
Like, oh, I don't want to give my Chihuahua a 3-year vaccine. It's probably going to hurt him or her. Let's do
right.
the 1-year.
Right.
And so that is a fallacy,
mm-hmm.
right? In fact, many of the vaccines that we use in a 3-year fashion can be or could be used in a 1-year fashion as well. It is the body's response to the vaccine to develop antibodies that gives you the protection, right? You don't give the vaccine. The three-year vaccine is not three times as potent. It's not three times the volume. It's not three times anything other than we can get a guarantee from the manufacturer or have challenge studies show us that there are protective antibodies on board in that pet for at least that long. In fact, the three-year DAP, distemper adenovirus parvo vaccine that we give has been shown at times to last actually up to 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just thought maybe we could just share that. COVID vaccines still hard to get at this point. You know, immunology is at the forefront of the news with the vaccine and protective antibodies. Now they're thinking if you've gotten exposed to COVID and you do test positive for antibodies, that you're going to be protected at least up to 8 months is what I recently heard. So just to kind of wrap this segment up, the three-year vaccines that we commonly administer to dogs are rabies, distemper adenovirus, and parvovirus. We call it DAP. And then cats will also get a three-year rabies vaccine. And then their HCP, which is a combination of three upper respiratory viruses, right?
Yep.
And then the last thing along those lines is we always vaccinate initially with a one-year. We get through the puppy or kitten series. Those are one-year vaccines. And then when we see them back for their next annual visit, we start them on three-year vaccines.
For their first adult visit. Yeah, for sure.
Moving forward. So,
I guess just you said it but didn't really say it. So basically, there is a one-year and a three-year. And essentially, the difference in most practices is going to be cost.
Yeah.
But the vaccine inside the bottle is typically the same. It's just the label is different. Fair statement?
Yeah. Rabies actually is that way, is my understanding. It's the same vaccine, but it's a little more expensive when it's labeled for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And state law, if you're giving a 3 year vaccine, it needs to have a 3 year label on it.
Yep.
So
yeah, for sure.
Distemper, not the same. So again, we could start going down a slippery slope here,
yeah.
But
there's an article on the DVM 360 from Dr. Richard Ford back in 2017. And he basically says the same thing, especially with rabies vaccines, that generally the only difference between a 1 year rabies vaccine and a 3 year rabies vaccine is how it's labeled. And so I guess on the client side of things, it's going to be and how much it costs you.
How it's labeled, how it's used in our vaccine protocol.
Of course.
Right? So, yes, client is going to pay. I think the way we have things priced, you basically pay for 2 years, but you get 3 years of protection.
Yeah. One is one and a three is the price of two.
Yeah. But it is how you use it. We do not give a naive puppy a three-year rabies vaccine and a three-year distemper parvo and call them good.
No.
Right. We give them typically start 6 to 8 weeks of age, and then we're going to vaccinate every 3 weeks for, I'm just going to say, the DAP. It would be HCP in a cat. And then we're going to end when they're at least 16 weeks of age.
Mm-hmm.
And then once again, we're going to come back roughly in a year, and we're going to start boosting some of those with the three-year vaccine. So
cool.
Definitely should do that, is my opinion, because it's available, and you know, I think it's easier on the pet, easier on the pocketbook. No reason not to do it.
So one thing, you know, we talked recently in our lead meeting with our other cohorts. Is that right? Cohorts?
They're not cohorts, so they must be.
Well,
cohorts.
It's Valentine's Day, so I have to say cohorts. I'm just kidding. Last Friday with some other leaders in the practices, and we talked about all of the vaccine clinics that are kind of popping up around here. And I think the perception from our clients or people that aren't our clients and don't know us and know our pricing structure is that those places are going to be cheaper for their vaccines. But essentially they're not, because most of those places are going to offer a 1 year vaccine.
Right.
And so essentially if you keep going there on an annual basis,
It
costs more. And so it's sometimes hard to explain that to clients, or people who are shopping.
Yeah. It's a misperception of value.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of our clients who you and Lance know, who comes from Atlanta to see us, was here this past week, and the, associate DVM that saw him said he made the comment that you guys are so much cheaper than in the middle of Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
And
I would believe it, right? So he has to drive past us anyways because he goes out to Braselton. So We're probably midpoint for him.
And so, you know, we hear some of our clients moaning and groaning a little bit about our cost, right? But our fee structure, I think, is very, very fair. I've always said from the minute we opened the practice that we're going to recommend and do more for the pet. We're going to hopefully take it to the next level versus just sitting back and doing only the basics.
Of course, yeah. And so I think what you're talking about when we hear the grumbling from our clients, it's never to our face, right? We send out a post-visit survey response. So everyone that comes into the practice and checks out, they get an email within 24 hours that says, you know, like, hey, tell us what you think. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, I mean,
it's like, we love you guys, but it is just so expensive to go there.
And then you go back and you review their record, and they got every single vaccine. They took all the recommendations, every single vaccine. They did blood work on their pet, and they walked out the door with 12 doses of prevention.
12 months of heartworm prevention.
So they're spending $700-800.
Yeah.
And I get it. That's a lot of money, but they're done. They're done for a year.
Yep. Yeah, completely taken care of, have all their products in hand, and they just have to give them. At that point.
So to your point, it's perception. It's giving people or letting them understand the value in which we're doing. And they don't have to take all of those recommendations. They don't have to take that many doses of preventative with them. But it's a lot easier sometimes to get everything one and done. But then I guess, of course, it is a little sticker shock in the pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, I think that ring means that we're just about at the end of the old Valentine's podcast, unless you have something
on. Means?
Yeah, that's what
well,
that means.
The only thing I really wanted to mention is that, so today is Valentine's Day. Tomorrow is a holiday, which is surprising to a lot of people. Do you know what tomorrow's holiday is?
I think it's President's Day.
It is President's Day. So did you know that President's Day is always celebrated on the third Monday in February?
I did not, but I think there typically is a mattress sale going on President's Day. And I don't know why I know that, but I think there is.
There's always a mattress and a furniture sale, right?
I guess always, yeah.
It's so funny. Probably because people are off work, right? And what else are they going to do? They're going to go shopping.
For a mattress, I guess.
I mean, if it's on sale, why not?
So have you heard, I feel like it's been pounded into our brains by the mattress salespeople that you should change your mattress every 7 years.
Oh gosh, here we go.
Have you heard that?
This is a pet peeve of yours. Yes.
Yeah. Well, who came up with that?
Mattress salespeople.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
So you should change your mattress when you need to change your mattress. That's my answer, because they're going to be different qualities, different varieties. I don't know. That just bothers me. So anyway.
Yes. So let's talk about President's Day. So President's Day was originally established in 1885 in recognition of President George Washington, America's first president. Did you know that?
Nope.
Let's play a little game here. Do you know the president's faces on Mount Rushmore?
I just looked at it yesterday. Because
how many are there?
There's four.
Okay. Who are they?
Jefferson.
Dead silence.
Grant?
No.
Jefferson?
Do,
I have no clue. I don't know. My son Asher went there this past summer, and he's like, I hate to say this, but he said that was one of the, I mean, we got out of the car, we walked up, like, boom, there's Mount Rushmore. Okay, let's get in the car. Let's go.
So
it was a little underwhelming.
I mean, it's cool. I think it's the history behind it, right? It's the same thing as like the Hoover Dam. You go there and it's like, oh, this is cool. But like the science or the methods behind it and the masses of people and like the engineering it took to create things like that way back then. I mean, these days we could probably laser inscribe faces on the side of mountains.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. 3D print them and stick them up there or whatever. Yeah. So
to answer your question,
Thomas Jefferson.
So let's start with George Washington, right? I mean, because like...
Not Lincoln.
America's first president.
So he is on there?
George Washington is on there.
Thomas Jefferson. I said not Abraham Lincoln.
But you would be wrong.
Really?
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln is on there. And then there's one more.
Can you give me a hint? Because I clearly don't know.
You might, on Valentine's Day, get one of these with a little heart in front of it.
Wow,
a teddy. Come on. Teddy Roosevelt.
Wow. That was a horrible clue.
That's a
Theodore Roosevelt.
Clue.
Okay. Huh.
People give teddies with hearts in front of them every year on Valentine's Day.
Who played Teddy Roosevelt and not at the museum?
I don't know.
Pretty sure it was Robin Williams.
Maybe.
Yeah. So.
All right.
All right.
Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.